BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
Hello, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. Sitting in for Robert Elms yet again. And I'm enjoying this week. I'm enjoying it. It's Thursday already. It's the 1st of August. What does that mean to us? Well, it means tomorrow's my wife's birthday. I've bought nothing. Nothing. I'm dashing off after this to go and buy something. Girls like some things, don't they? I'll go and buy that. Lots coming up on the show today, including Jason Solomons will be coming in to talk about the new films out. Lots of them have the number 2 after them. It always makes me slightly uncomfortable. Marcus de Sotoy, OBE. He's a professor. He's coming in to talk about Brainiac Live, science abuse. Cover to cover, we finally settled. Thank you so much for your help yesterday. We finally settled on what we're going to choose for cover to cover. I'll tell you in a little bit. Good ones, good ones. And then before 3, Robbie Boyd, singer-songwriter, is coming in. He's played on top of the O2, on top of the O2, I heard. You wouldn't get me up there for all the tea in China, let me tell you that. If you want to take part in the show, it's kind of, because it's so nice out there, London's very, it's very relaxed at the moment. It's quite laid back. A little bit sleepy. Can I tell you, I had a doze in my car before I came in. No, it's not naughty. I was thinking maybe you could give me a call this today and let me know the best places to have a doze in London. There aren't many. I parked up in Highgate Tube Station. Oh, it's lovely. It's all cool, a little bit moist there, in the good sense. Shady. Parked at the end. Close my eyes. 20 minutes power nap. Thank you very much. There aren't many places in London where you can have a doze, are there? It's such a noisy place. I'm trying to think, there must be some good places. Hyde Park. I've had a doze in Hyde Park before, like some old down and out. Where are the best places to have a doze in London? And we go, we'll throw that out there. 020-7224-2000. It can be your desk. It could, some people doze under their desk at work. Can you imagine that? Where's the best place to have a power nap, a doze? 0207-224-2000. You can text 81333. Start your text, London. Or you can email me as well if you want. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. IAIN.LEE. Best places to have a little doze in London, please. 0207-224-2000. Now, Glen Campbell, one of my favourites. I've mentioned this already this week. He's got a new album out where I think he's re-recorded some of his old songs. Not always the best idea, but the single from that, if singles even exist anymore, is Postcard from Paris. This is going to be the first time I've heard it. I'm already, knowing it's Glen Campbell, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. Let's listen to it, and in 3 minutes 36 seconds, I'll let you know if I'm going to revise that review. Oh, I gave it an 8. I'm going to downgrade it slightly to a 7. I'll tell you why. Cracking song. Lovely. Scott has tweeted me, and I agree with Scott. It's great, other than it sounds like he's singing through a vocoder. There was a strange effect on Glenn's voice there. Very strange. You don't need to put any effects on that man's voice. Even at the age of, what is he now, 72 or something like that? Even at the age of 72, even with the fact he is blighted by Alzheimer's, he's still got a cracking voice. I'll give it 7.5. There we go. Fantastic. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms today. Coming up later on, it's cover to cover. If you heard yesterday's show, you would know I was in a slight dilemma. I didn't have a clue what to choose. I didn't have a clue. I realised that by sitting in for Robert, I'm filling not only big shoes, but also a big chair. I'm not saying he's a fat man. I'm just saying he's a very, you know, he's been doing this forever. So to sit in and try and take control for a week is a brave thing to do. And I didn't want to get the cover to cover wrong. I wanted to choose something that you would enjoy playing along with at home. It is a little game, isn't it, really? Play two versions of the same song. We kind of take them apart and try and decide which is the best. Well, thank you very much to all of you who suggested songs yesterday. We've come up with one. We've come up with one. And do you know what? It's probably the best choice. I think so. It's Love the One You're With. Stephen Stills versus the Isley Brothers. Didn't somebody else do a version apart from the Isley Brothers? Was it the gentleman who sang about wanting to dance with his dad one more time, but he couldn't because he was dead? Who is the Luther Vandross? Was it Luther Vandross? Did he do Love the One You're With? I think he... Did I just dream that? I'm sure Luther Vandross... He strikes me as the sort who would. Not for one second saying Luther Vandross has got loose morals, but that's what the song is about, isn't it? With the horrible line, if you can't be with the one you love, i.e. your wife's too far away, love the one you're with. What Stephen Stills is saying when he wrote that song was, is if your missus is too far away, don't matter if there's a groupie next door or Graham Nash, then go and jump on them. And in the does it fit into that hippie ideal and ethic, or is it just a little bit misogynistic? I don't know. We can discuss that. But this is the song we'll be playing a little bit later on, OK? After 2 o'clock. I'm looking forward to this. So let's have a little clip. This is Stephen Stills.
Don't be angry, don't be sad, but don't sit crying over good times ahead. There's a girl right next to you, and she's just waiting for something to do. And there's a rose in the blistering light.
Oh dear. But not of dearing Stephen Stills. Stephen Stills, I think, is a genius, a god, and everybody, including Mr. Neil Young, should bow down in front of him. I'm saying oh dear, because the team working on this show completely... Well, they're disagreeing with my interpretation of the song. My interpretation of the song is... Who knows who's right? Let's put this out there. 0207-224-2000. What on earth is the song about? My interpretation of the song is... if the person that you are betrothed to, your wife or your long-time girlfriend, the person you're going steady with, is on the other side of America, then it's legitimate and acceptable to cop off with the person sat next to you, if they're up for it. My production team said, no, we interpreted it as, you know, just it make the most of the person that you're with. 0207-224-2000. I think I've got it. If you can't be with the one you love, make... love the one you're with. That was Stephen Stills. He wrote it. This is the Isley Brothers.
Don't be angry. Don't be sad. Don't sit crying. Talk about the times.
Well, I've not heard this version. This is good.
Sitting right next to you. And she's just waiting for something to do.
Here comes the line.
Well, there's a rose in a fisted glove.
This is the line that makes it dirty.
And it's the case with the one you love, honey. Love the one.
Yeah, it's about infidelity. It's promoting infidelity. That's a cracking version. I have heard the Isley Brothers version, but years and years ago. Oh, it's good. They're both, I mean, it is, in its truest sense, a dirty little song, but they've both got an edge. The Stills has the acoustic edge. The Isley Brothers, just a little bit kind of, a bit more mysterious. We'll be playing that after two, so I'm keen to find out which one wins. I suspect this could be a close call. Stills versus the Isley Brothers. And by the way, if anybody wants to get into a debate about how good Stephen Stills is compared to, well, certainly to Graham Nash, certainly to David Crosby, and definitely to Mr. Neil Young, then please do give me a call, 0207-224-2000. I like Neil Young. I like the fact that Neil Young exists. I'm not so keen on his music. And his autobiography, by the way, is a joy to read. It's just a rambling stream of consciousness, and it's wonderful. But Neil Young has had more misses than he has hits, hasn't he? I mean, he's done some great songs, but most of his stuff, it's too spontaneous for me. Neil Young is what... Do I say this? Do I dare say this while I'm sat in for Robert Elms on BBC London 94.9? Yes, I do. Neil Young is one of those mysteries to me. He's one of those people, those acts, those bands that everybody raves about, and I just don't get. I know, blasphemy. I'm sorry. It's like U2. U2, I don't get U2. I went to see, a few years ago, for the Island Records 50th anniversary, I went to see Cat Stevens, Yusuf Islam, as he now is, at Shepherd's Bush Empire. The first gig he played in about 20 years, publicly. The tickets cost me, I think, about £300 for two tickets on eBay. I know, naughty. I went there, stood there with my wife, very, very excited, both huge Cat Stevens fans, and a young African singer came on and was playing for a bit, and was going on a bit, and we're looking at our watches, thinking, oh, for goodness sakes, hurry up. And he says, right, this is my last song, and we breathed a sigh of relief, meaning Cat Stevens will be on sooner. But it wasn't his last song. He said, ah, it wasn't my last song, I lied. Before I go, I'd like to bring on a couple of guests. Oh, no, please. No guests. Out walk Bono and The Edge from U2. The whole of Shepherd's Bush Empire, as you can imagine, went mental. It erupted that the good half of U2 had walked on stage. So they're on stage, U2, this African fella, they start playing Bob Marley songs, another person I don't get. I know I won't be coming back. I know the looks I'm getting. Can we get somebody in for tomorrow? And it went on for ages, and everybody's going bonkers that it's U2 playing these Bob Marley songs. And I'm just thinking, oh, please, please get off the stage. Everybody's shouting more. I'm shouting less, less. We want Cat. If you want to give me a call about acts that you don't get, that other people constantly rave about, I'm always happy to talk about that. 0207 224 2000. Now, there's someone no one can have a bad word to say about. Kirsty McCall. Oh, I miss Kirsty McCall, and I wish I'd made more use of her while she was alive. Does that make sense? Probably doesn't to you. In my head, it does. I kind of miss the fact... How long ago did Kirsty McCall pass away? I bet it was longer than I think. I wouldn't dare hazard to put a date on it. 81333. Start your text with London. I'm sure you can tell me that. But I miss her. I miss the fact that she's not, you know, kind of floating around every now and then releasing records and just being nice. I never met her, but I bet she was really nice. Very sad. Lovely Kirsty McCall. Right, this is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms. Coming up later on, we've got talking about some of the new releases coming out in the cinema. I haven't been to the pictures for ages. I'm so lazy. I was really excited about going to see the new Superman film and also the Liberace film. The Liberace film got me more excited than any other film has done in recent years. I still couldn't be bothered to go. What is it about me? Are you the same? I think we've been spoilt with streaming films online. You can stream films on your telephone now. Isn't that incredible, isn't it? I know, it's not that incredible. It's been, you can do it for years. I'm just a very old man. But the thought of going to the cinema, it's such a faff and it does... anyway, what I'm trying to say is I missed the Liberace film now, and I'll have to wait for it to come out on DVD when I shall then go out and buy it. If you want to give me a call today, maybe you want to tell me what films you've seen recently. Looking for the best places as well in London to have a sneaky doze. I do like a doze, and I just don't... London is so busy and is so noisy and hectic... and frenetic that I can't think of that many places you can doze. You can't doze in libraries anymore. Yes, you can make noise in libraries, which I think is wrong. There's no one is employed to tell you to go shh in libraries anymore. It doesn't happen. Libraries are very noisy places. I got thrown out of a library in Slough when I was 5 years old for being too noisy. My mum made me go and stare. Then I got told off. The librarian came outside because I was being too noisy outside the library. That's what libraries were like in the 70s. But where can you go in London for a cheeky little doze? I can't think of any places. I'm a big fan of the doze. I do like closing my eyes and lying down. And, well, it's sleeping, isn't it? 020-722-42000. I found this cracking album that I've not played for ages. Mama Cass, OK? This is her first solo album, Cass Elliot. It sold, I think, about 7 copies. And when you listen to this song, Jesus Was a Crossmaker, when you hear how good this is... you'll think, why on earth did nobody go and buy this? Sing it, girl. What a voice. She's good, isn't she? Honestly, if you see the Cass Elliot album, it's I think it's her second solo album. If you see it on vinyl or on CD, go and treat yourself to it. It's sold 7 copies and it is a masterpiece. Afternoon, it's a lovely day out there. I'm trying to find the best places to have a nap in London. I had a great doze in my car. Normally, if you have a doze in the car, I've got a very specific physical technique as well. Don't get too excited, ladies, or indeed gentlemen. It involves putting the back of my driver's seat back. Have to sleep in the driver's seat. Putting the back of the driver's seat back, turning onto my left-hand side, my left leg goes on the passenger seat, right leg goes in the footwell of the passenger's side. I know I'm tall, 6'3" sometimes. Head goes on the headrest, the arm, the right arm, gets locked underneath the headrest. Oh, it's wonderful. A great doze. Today. I would put today's doze in the car. 20 minutes, I would put it in my top 5 all-time dozes. Refreshing, wonderful. I was woken by a siren and I thought my house was on fire. Wonderful, because my house isn't on fire. Is it? I hope not. The best places to have a doze in London, please. 0207 224 2000. I suspect a lot of them will be shady places for cars. There aren't that many places you can do it outside of a car. Hyde Park I've had a doze in. I'm always worried about sleeping in parks. In case I wake up and it's night time and I'm locked in. Which could happen. Or I've had all of my clothes stolen again, which could happen. 0207 224 2000. 81333, start your text with London, or you can send me an email if you want, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Coming up, Jason Solomons will be coming in to talk about the big cinema releases at the moment. Before that, shall we have a little bit of music? Oh, look, this fits perfectly. The Boys of Summer. Good afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. That wasn't a sigh out of boredom. That was a sigh out of, because I'm enjoying the summer vibe, you see. It was just a... Ah, life's all right kind of sigh. You know, it's one of those sighs, not a, oh, I'm here again, I want to go home. No, it was a nice kind of sigh. It was
almost existential, because it was, hi, yes. I'm Ian Lee, and it was as if you were wearied of that fact, not, I'm still Ian Lee. Jason, I might be Don Henley or Superman.
I met Don Henley once. I say met him, I was in the same room as Don Henley at Sky News. He's wee. You could fit him in your pocket.
Really? 2 Don Henleys for the price of 1?
Exactly. He's no more than 5'3", I think.
Really?
I think he was minute.
Small pop stars.
Or maybe it was Glenn Fry. Anyway, it was one of the...
No, Glenn Fry's tall.
Oh, it was Henley,
yeah, he's
then.
No small fry. Glenn Fry, not small fry.
No small fry. Yeah. Jason Solomons is here, the movie expert.
I'll go with that.
Is that not big in your...
That guru is sometimes used. Well, I don't know why. I don't really kind of dispense wisdom as such with a view to improving people's lives, which I think gurus do.
When you say expert, or indeed guru... Do you mean you just watch lots of films? Because in that case, I'm a sitting on my backside expert.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think as my grandma says, as long as you've got an ology, as a kind of an expert at something, it's good. So I watch them and I sort of take notes, right. Is the other bit. Because people say to me, oh, you watch movies for a living, you watch movies all day.
Yeah.
And I do watch movies all day, some days.
Yep.
When I earn my money is when I write about them and talk about them. So just watching them is not in itself enough.
It does sound very pleasurable and a lot of fun. People think that must be the easiest job in the world. But you have to sit through so much guff, don't you, to get to the good stuff.
Yeah, it is true. But I still don't mind it.
Really?
My colleague at the Observer, Philip French, who's retiring now at the age of 80, and just before Smurfs 2 began this week.
Speaking of...
I was like, why are you here? What are you doing? You have an OBE for film criticism. Why are you watching Smurfs 2, Philip? Sure, and he's...
This is a reason for my retirement.
But it's not been just Smurfs 2. I mean, that man has seen, you know, Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel, you know.
I get a feeling he's got a soft spot for those low-rent animations. He thought Smurfs 1 was such a great movie. He could... Oh, Smurfs... I'll do Smurfs 2, guys! No, I'll go and do Smurfs 2, guys. It'll be fine. I need to test your credentials first, though. Best film of all time?
My favourite film. Yeah. I can't tell you the best film of all time. Right? I mean, it's supposed to be Vertigo, isn't it, officially? But it's
already
not.
It's a good answer. Yeah. Okay, yes.
But my favourite film of all time is Annie Hall.
Really? Does Annie? I mean, it's a fantastic film. Long time since I've seen it. I need to dust that off. Actually,
see it again, because you'll have changed since the last time you've seen it, and there you'll have a different view of it.
Does it stand the test of time?
Yeah, absolutely. God, it's even more modern than ever. I mean, it just looks wonderful, and it's so thrillingly modern still. I mean, it's 1977, so you know. But it kind of regurgitates itself because it's about relationships. Mm. So it's actually going to be for all time. But it's also about living in the big city, and the city, you know, New York was so amazingly exotic then, and now it's a changed New York, but it's about, you know, she's still cool. You know, her look is still cool.
I do need to watch it, because it's been a lot. I've not seen that for about 20 years.
But the Woody Allen documentaries were on BBC One over the last week, a couple of nights.
Oh, I've missed... Well, hang on a second, I've missed
two
all
Woody
this.
Allen documentaries.
Does he just keep turning out... Because he does, like, three films a year. Does he just keep churning them out, hoping that one of them will be good?
Yeah, he does.
Because
really.
Most of them are rubbish, aren't they?
Well, no, yeah, people. That seems to be the what people say about it. But Midnight in Paris was a big success everywhere, and Vicky Cristina Barcelona, you know, I think they've always got something interesting. Though his latest is Blue Jasmine. It's not out here; it's out in the States.
That's
great
had great reviews, hasn't it? Actually,
Kate
yes.
Blanchett's probably going to get Oscar nominated right. for it. So what I don't think is he knows if whether he's made a good one or a bad one. I don't think he knows anymore.
He has no quality control.
Not really,
himself.
But he is capable of brilliance. Yeah. So therefore, he is still good. Mm. And there are bits in all of those that are genius in their way. But he is quick. You know, he doesn't kind of take a lot of time. Yes. So there is a kind of a sort of hurried.
He knows that. I mean, he's got to be in his late 60s, 70s, maybe. Yeah. He must know that time is running out.
Yeah,
and
but he's been contemplating death
in.
Since he was five, so he's no further along the line than he was then.
I'll give you Annie Hall. In that case, you can stay and tell us what films you've got for us. Smurfs.
I don't have an Annie Hall, sadly.
Does Smurfs 2 match Annie Hall in any level whatsoever?
Right, nor does it match Midnight in Paris, which is probably more relevant because, as they do often, or they used to do in sequels, like National Lampoon's, they go to Paris.
Yes.
For some reason.
National Lampoon's
used to
European
be a big
vacation.
Hollywood thing. They used to kind of go, oh, what are we going to do for the next one? Oh, we'll take them abroad, like Carry On Abroad. And we take them, like the British TV series, when they used to make the movie of those things.
Oh,
they'd always say, well, let's take them abroad. So it would be, you know, Carry On Abroad or Are You Being Served
Abroad. Please, sir. Abroad, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, Zedcars, don't think they went abroad. Down south they went.
You're older than me, I have no idea what this Zedcars is you're talking about, Jason?
Yeah, so Smurf 2, they end up in Paris, which is basically, I mean, the scant charms of the first film I just about get when I watch bits of it with my children. This one doesn't, the Smurfs 2 does not even sort of have those scant charms. It is about it's really complicated, as with all these completely ridiculous films. If I tried to explain the plot, I would be here for hours.
The Smurfs are French, aren't they?
Les Schtroumpfs, they would be called in Paris, which is why I don't know why Smurfs 2 doesn't have a sort of better title, like Smurfia.
Yes.
Or something, at least.
Smurfs get dirty, Paris, or Smurfs, they go into. So what happens? They go to Paris.
Hank Azaria, who plays Gargamel, the evil wizard who you must remember from your youth, he has now become a top wizard. And he's got his own show now, and he's performing. He's the first magic actor to perform in the Opera de la du Paris for some reason, rather than Vegas. I don't quite know why, but he's doing magic in Paris. And what he wants is the essence of Smurf, so he has to capture a Smurf, and he captures Smurfette and Smurf naps her to Paris.
Well, so Smurfette, if I've got my Smurf chronology correct, didn't Gargamel create Smurfette to get the boy
correct.
Smurfs all fruity?
Yes,
I remember that.
So it doesn't actually say, it does say that in this movie, but you have to pretty know that, and she's played by Katy Perry. In an interesting...
You say played, they're not wearing blue suits, are they?
No, that would
it's a voiceover, it's a cartoon. Yes,
they are voiced by Katy Perry. But it'd be great if she were actually played by Katy Perry in blue, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it just?
And then, so come to some of the Smurfs, passive-aggressive Smurf, clumsy Smurf, Vanity Smurf, go to Paris through a portal, and they run around Paris, and, you know, Paris is the kind of, I don't know why they go there with these Hollywood seekers. I guess it's because they're still annoyed with Paris for taking cinema as an art form. So they think if we go there and spend loads of money there and trash it, then that will be some revenge, and we don't have to consider cinema as le 7e art anymore. Mm-hmm. So they go to Paris and they run around Paris, and Brendan Gleeson's in it. He gets turned into a duck. I don't know.
Let's be honest. Now, listen, our tongues are slightly in our cheek. Let's be honest, Jason. It's not aimed at... I mean, what are you? We're in our 40s.
Yes,
it's not aimed at us.
It isn't, I think we are the people who have young children.
We would have to sit through it.
I don't think even if I was 4, I would understand what was going on in this.
Really?
And it's not even cute. The first one they get, because they go into New York and they kind of ingratiate themselves in the lives of Sean Patrick Harris, and they kind of have fun in a bathroom squirting toothpaste. Kids get that. Mm. This going to Paris and going up the Eiffel Tower and going on the big wheel in the Tuileries. They're just not going to get it. I just did not understand what was going on.
Wow, you've really... First of all, I think we may have overanalyzed the Smurfs a little bit too much here. We're disappearing up our own Smurf hole. But it's upset you, this, hasn't it, that you couldn't grasp this?
No, it's just the complexity of the plot, really, where it was labyrinthine. And it was charmless. The first one does have something for it. This one just, I think, is going to be a bit of a flop, really.
That's a shame. Coming out, I mean, these are out now, or are they coming out?
Yeah, they're out on Friday.
Coming out soonish. Yeah. Because it is the first full week of school holidays, so parents will be looking for something to take their kids to.
But, you know, Monsters University, even Despicable Me 2, which I don't particularly like, but they are, Smurfs 2 is really...
You're a grouch. You're a real grouch.
I like Monsters University a lot.
Oh, you're not so grouchy. You see? Okay, so Smurfs 2, maybe not, in your opinion, the best of films.
No, but it does. The strange thing is that Smurfs 2 goes to Paris, and so there's a car chase or a duck chase or a big wheel chase through Paris with lots of tourists kind of going, oh, look at that. And there's another film out this week called Red 2.
Oh, yes, okay, go on.
Right, and so that Smurfs 2 is for the kids in Paris. Red 2 has got all older people. You've seen the posters, Helen Mirren and
Yes, of course.
And
they've not gone to Paris, have they?
They've gone to Paris in Red 2.
Do they see the Smurfs there? Do their paths cross?
Strangely not. They must have maybe been there on different days of production.
Yep.
But they do a car chase through Paris and kind of trash it a bit and blow up a bit of Paris. And I was just watching these two films, but I thought, this is strange. I don't know what it means.
Yep.
But it means that Paris is obviously short of a few bob.
Paris is obviously offering nice tax incentives. Although, of course, to make the Smurfs 2, they wouldn't have had to go to Paris, would they?
They did, though. I think they clearly did. Although not the Smurfs themselves would not have had to, but the real people might have had to. Some camera crew might have.
It's just drawing, though, isn't it?
I know, but this did actually look like they were sort of there.
What?
Yeah, it looked quite nice. All these films made me do, I was like, I quite fancy getting to Paris.
Yeah.
Maybe think.
I wouldn't mind a bit of Paris. Yeah, are you free this weekend?
You know what? That's the best offer I've had.
Red, I didn't enjoy the first Red. I'm a big Bruce Willis fan. Bruce Willis is one of the best actors in the world, and he can brighten the dullest script. Red, I thought, he didn't breathe much life into it.
No, he's in the phase right now that he just looks like he cannot be bothered at all. He looks like a turtle who has lost its shell and is stabbing around, can't be bothered. And he joins another man who also looks like he can't be bothered, John Malkovich, in this, and they both look like turtles who've lost their shells. And it's just these necks kind of walking around, no hair. And I know that the new trend in cinema is that the older people have got lots of time on their hands and they like going to cinema, and they're keeping cinema alive with hits like Best Exotic, Marigold Hotel, and the Late Quartet, and that one Quartet as well, with also old people going to the cinema. And that's because they've got some time on their hands, but they're also a bit intelligent, one would hope, by now.
Apparently so, yes, I've heard
this. Red 2, even though it might be tapping into that sort of, you know, desire for the older audience, they're not stupid. Why make a stupid film? Because Red 2 is, without doubt, stupid.
The premise, isn't it, that these are old, retired OAP spies, basically,
and
going around shooting.
Back into action. The reason for this one is that there's it's a Cold War movie, so they've got an unexploded nuclear bomb has been placed somewhere 40 years ago during the Cold War, and they have to find out why it's there or who's got it now, and they run around a lot trying to find this bomb, and they get Helen Mirren, and they get Anthony Hopkins, who's the best thing in it. He's the sort of mad kind of Bletchley type kind of scientist who's been kept in a high security prison, MI5, in London. So they go from London to New York and all around, and to Moscow. The climate's in Moscow, and Mary Louise Parker is in it as the sort of psychic. She's the sort of funny one. She does the jokes. But then they chase David Thewlis around Paris. It could still be going on in a cinema. They could just another scene and another old person could be coming in.
Yeah.
And then at some point they decide, oh, we might finish the film now. Let's blow up the bomb. And go home. But there's no reason they didn't do it after 5 minutes or after 120 minutes. Or as I say, still.
Did the first one do very well? It must have done
for a sequel, yeah. I mean, I think there's a sort of appetite for Bruce Willis. I mean, Bruce Willis, as you say, he's got something, but he just doesn't care at the moment. Yeah. He's in The Expendables. There's another recent Die Hard, the one he was in Russia with his son.
I loved that. I think I was the only person that loved
you
that
must
Die
have been
Hard.
The only person.
I thought
it was
wonderful.
Nice to see John McClane back. Yeah. It is, to see McClane and his insouciant kind of way.
Yeah.
But I don't.
But he's kind of playing a slightly slower John McClane in Red as well, isn't
he?
It's the same bald guy with guns.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some bits of it that work quite well, because Bruce Willis is quite good at kind of rolling on his side and shooting a gun. That's a real act. They don't do that, Rada. But Malkovich is pretty terrible. It's pretty horrible to see Malkovich in this. I mean, he plays a kind of sort of fat kind of guy, and it's just, he looks really weird. He's always looked weird, Malkovich, but we remember him as Valmore, and he was so seductive in Dangerous Liaisons, and he couldn't seduce, he really could not seduce anyone.
So not a thumbs up for Red 2 then?
No, either. I found it really, I do think there is something enjoyment in there if you kind of like that little bit of insouciant humour, but it just wasn't funny at all. And Helen Mirren, you kind of think, well, you don't know, she's the queen, and of course she can do what she likes, and I just thought she looked a bit lost in this as well.
Give us one more, then we'll have a record, and then we'll talk some more after 1 o'clock. What have you got?
I have got for you... Do you like scary movies?
Oh, I do love scary movies. I love them. They're my favourites.
Right, so I don't like scary movies because they're scary.
That's
not because they're bad. That's
the point of them.
I'm such a sucker. Like, all someone's got to do is show a cellar door creaking and a shadow and then go...
I'm in.
And I go, no, don't go there. Don't go.
Yeah.
And they always do.
Yeah, of course they have to.
And there's a film out this week called The Conjuring.
Oh, yes. Now, go on, I've heard about this.
It's really scary.
Fantastic.
I haven't been scared. I do watch scary movies and then I'm always disappointed. So I think, well, they're just rubbish. They didn't scare me. This one... properly scared me.
Now, who's behind this? Well. There are names behind
James Wan, who W-A-N, he, no wonder he's so Wan if you make scary movies.
Yeah, exactly.
They made me quite Wan. He invented this the series of horror movies, which I hate, called the Saw series.
Yes.
Saw 1, 2, 3, through 6.
Yep.
He only directed the first one, but he kind of was the executive producer of the lot. I don't like those torture porn. I thought they were kind of horrible and stuff. You probably
liked
them.
I liked the first one a lot because of the brilliant twist.
It was a good, great idea.
Second one I enjoyed quite a bit. After that, I lost interest.
Yeah,
I thought
exactly.
They became very tedious.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they're still going. He's about to direct Fast and Furious 7. Interesting factoid. But for the moment, he's directed The Conjuring, which is based on the true story of people who moved into a big old scary house in the countryside.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
Things start going bump, clack and squeak in the night. And they call in the... Who are you going to call? There are Ghostbusters, real-life Ghostbusters.
Wow.
Ed Warren and his wife, Lorraine, who are the real people that did Amityville.
Yep.
That kind of, you know, whatever they did, cleansed Amityville.
Well, Amityville was supposed to have been based on a true story.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be based on a true story.
Okay.
It was from the journals of these complete nutcases. Mr. Warren, if you're listening, I'm sure you've got to... He's a demonologist.
I'm distancing myself and the BBC from calling anybody a nutcase, yes.
But they are... I mean, he's a bit possessed by mad... He goes to these places and kind of cleanses the demon out of, like, creepy music boxes and possessed dolls. I hate dolls. Dolls are scary. And ventriloquist dummy is really scary.
Yeah, Venn dolls are definitely freaky.
And he's got a collection of them in his house.
Are we talking about him or the film now? I'm confused.
We're in the I think he's a real
right.
person. He does exist, this
right.
Ed Warren.
Okay.
And this is taken from his journals. This is the story so scary that he would never dare to tell it till now.
Till now, because our levels of fear have been reduced, so we can accept this story.
And this
now.
Is genuinely scary. They go to this house and they get possessed by the demon. And there's always, if ever a big scary house and it's in kind of the Rhode Island, Massachusetts area, bad idea, because it's always got to do with Salem and the witches of Salem.
Yep.
And this so they go to this house and they realise that something's been possessed by people, witches and people who are hanged, and then the mum starts going, I want to kill my children, and they have to get the demonologist in. It was really scary, and it's helped because Patrick Wilson is in it. He plays Ed Warren, he's good. Vera Farmiga is his wife, Lorraine, she's very good, and there's a brilliant performance as the sort of possessed mum who goes mental and goes and starts spitting blood and head spinning around kind of stuff. Exorcist style, by Lily Taylor, who's a really fine little indie actress who was in I Shot Andy Warhol and many things like that, and she's brilliant. It's one of the really good horror performances, because sometimes scream queens can kind of do two things. She's properly good at this kind of
being. So this is The Conjuring.
I really think it's probably my film of the week, which I never say about scary movies.
Wow.
And it really is scary. I jumped to my
Jason,
seat a lot.
I'm going to stop you there. We'll be back with Jason Solomons in a second. Let me just play this, then we'll be back. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee on BBC London 94.9, sitting in for Robert Elms. My fat fingers there, maybe pressing a few of the incorrect buttons. It's 7 minutes past one. Thursday, the 1st of August. It's my wife's birthday tomorrow. I have no idea, Jason, what to get to her. Well, girls like things, don't they?
Yes.
I'll go and buy some things.
Diamonds, they
Wee.
Like.
Whoa, back away from the diamonds, young man. That ain't happening. I was thinking maybe like a deodorant or something.
Yes, they like deodorant.
They like deodorant.
Especially in the hot weather.
Of course, everyone likes a deodorant.
They prefer it if you're wearing it in the hot weather. But
no.
What do girls like? It's very hard to get girls stuff. Don't get them a handbag.
No, I wouldn't
Whatever
dream of it.
Whatever you do, do not go there. You will have no idea,
no.
A, how much they cost.
Yep.
They are ridiculous.
Ouch.
And B, you'll get the wrong one. that it's not big enough, it doesn't go with this thing, it's too big, it's not big enough, it's not, there's nothing to put in it. It is a world you will never understand.
And I don't want to turn into a bad 70s stand-up routine, but I would never buy a woman underwear or clothes, because if I get a size too big, would you think I'm that fat? If you get a size too small, you think I'm too fat?
Yeah, you want me to be small.
Yeah, you can't win. No. I will just...
I must say I'm quite good at clothes. I've got to say, it's a lot, one of the things I do.
What, for
I'm
women?
Quite good at clothes for women.
Really?
I do all right with the clothes.
Can you? Are you
Never
one of those...
The handbags or shoes.
Are you one of those people that can just get the size just by looking, or do you sneak a little look at...
That's an excuse to go up to kind of Cumley shop assistants and sort of say, what size are you?
Cumley?
Yeah. Cumley, only up to the Cumley ones and sort of say, yes, my wife's about the same as you.
Cumley means...
A lot older.
Cumley means rotund, doesn't
no,
it?
No, Cumley means... Doesn't it mean Cumley as in... Come here.
I don't think it does. I think you've basically just said that you're...
No, homely means...
Oh, homely. Yeah. You're right.
Comely means nice.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about fashions and my dilemma.
Well, I think you're in a good spot. We're here at your new broadcasting house in London's new broadcasting. You have Soho and you have Oxford Street and Regent Street. No. If you don't come home with a decent gift, Mr. Lee, you're
I
in
have,
trouble.
I have too much choice here.
Not
That's
chocolate.
The problem.
Don't go chocolate.
No, I wouldn't go chocolate.
That's lazy.
I think a deodorant and a flower.
You'd be fine.
That'll do it.
Now listen. Just get like a Lily of the Valley scent by Yardley, then you've ticked both those boxes.
Two birds, one stone, beautiful. Jason Solomons is joining me to talk about films. We've had Smurfs 2, Red 2, which didn't really...
Sounds like football results, certainly, doesn't it? This time of year.
The Conjuring, which you liked. What have you got for us next?
I did like The Conjuring.
Yes, you
I
did
really
like
it. I really
surprised
myself by liking The Conjuring. It's very, very good. And I would... It's a real midnight movie as well. A really kind of a Friday night kind of... And also, I think for your wife's birthday, you would have to hug her a little tighter. Hey, in the country.
She likes the scary films.
See, and this is good women's scary because it's quite feminist perspective as well.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
So I thought it was very good. So there is, I suppose, the cool film of the week is Only God Forgives, which sees Danish director Nicholas Winding Refn reteaming with his poster boy from the hit movie Drive, Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
Whom ladies seem to like. If you could give Ryan Gosling to your wife for her birthday, I'm sure she'd be very pleased.
Never seen a Ryan Gosling film, but I've seen poster. He is very good looking.
He is very good looking. He's very cool. Yeah. I mean, he's in a film that's out on DVD at the moment called The Place Beyond the Pines, which is, I think, one of my favourite movies of the year, if not my favourite movie of the year. He's terrific in that. He was in Drive, which was his sort of breakthrough as a kind of major star film, which Nicholas Winding Refn, the Danish director, who has also made films like The Pusher trilogy and Bronson, kind of sort of very art house.
He made Bronson.
Bronson.
Bronson is deemed as being ridiculous, isn't it? Isn't that the stylized story of Charles Bronson,
Gentleman
who's in prison,
notorious murderer and whatever,
and it involves lots of kind of freeze frames and sped up film and
Matrix
style.
Lots of kind of Brechtian kind of Bronson doing his own show. I mean, it was very experimental, we'll say for it, but quite of an interesting way into the mind of Mr. Bronson himself. So Nicholas is kind of an interesting director like this, but he suddenly was hit the mainstream. He won Best Director at Cannes for his film Drive, which was essentially a very flashy B movie, but very cool, with Ryan Gosling in this kind of, he was a sort of hitman in this assassin's coat, saving kind of Kerry Mulligan and going around LA with Bryan Cranston. It was a very cool movie, but it kind of tapped into those B movies of that time. So it was a genre piece. So what do they do next? They team up. Ryan Gosling is a much bigger star now. Nicholas Winding Refn is this kind of big autorial star now. They went off to Thailand to make Only God Forgives, which also stars Kristin Scott Thomas in a sort of a, as you've never seen her before. So she's blonde, she's kind of a kind of Medea, kind of Lady Macbeth type figure, head of the crime family. What's the story in Only God Forgives? I'm not quite sure what the story is. They're very stylish.
Do you understand any film? Smurfs 2, Only God Forgives, you've not been able to follow the plot.
No, Smurfs 2, I followed it. I was just like, I'm not going to bother explaining it to you. Only God Forgives doesn't have a plot, really.
Right, okay.
So it needs one. It's got Ryan Gosling. He seems to be an American bad boy who's in Bangkok with his brother. They're kind of doing some Bangkokian things that you do. I can go to nightclubs, hanging out in the Celia Red Light District and doing Thai boxing and running the book and kind of doing betting and getting involved with gangsters. Then it involves a kind of a machete-wielding Thai gangster who wants revenge on one of them for killing his daughter in a kind of quite horrific rape scene. It is relentlessly violent. I'm not against, as I don't like scary movies, but actually I don't mind violent movies so much.
Yes.
But this one I thought was a little bit too relentless in its violence. It was just a violence. So it's A Long Dark Night of the Soul in Bangkok, where it's very dark, very stylishly done. The one of the best things about this film, and I mean this in a kind of complimentary way, is the wallpaper. There was some fantastic
that really
wallpaper
is kind of
film.
Complimentary, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's got Ryan Gosling kind of in a smart suit doing boxing.
Hey, I've got... My mum's got that wallpaper at home. It's that kind
of... But I wish my mum had that wallpaper. It's really expensive stuff going on. Great interiors in this film. But it really is... It takes a lot of time. I mean, it's on purpose. They've done a lot of work on the interiors and the design of it and the look of it. And I think that that's a lot of style. Really, that's why it hasn't got a plot. It just needs a story to go with it. Especially, it's very monosyllabic, this film. I think Ryan Gosling in it, who's the main character and is in it quite a lot. He's got 17 lines of dialogue, I think it is.
In the whole film? Mm. Oh, that's a
great payday. There's a lot of kind of moody, silent kind of stuff going on. A lot of kind of fighting. There's a lot of macheting, nunchuckers, scimitars, samurai swords. It's sort of that Tarantino does it with a bit of wit. This doesn't have any wit to it, and it doesn't have any lightness to it. It's a very oppressive film. Some people have loved the style of it. Right. That's why the wallpapers are and the furnishings are amazing. It nods to a certain kind of revenge, kind of Eastern revenge, kind of Hong Kong movies.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds like a Hong Kong kind of
thing.
Yeah,
but it doesn't have the kind of... It doesn't have the spryness. Like, those have always got inventive kind of battles in them. Jackie Chan doing amazing kind of acrobats. This doesn't. This just has kind of a relentless kind ofness. It has the Cliff Martinez soundtrack. He's the composer who's worked with Steven Soderbergh before, and he did so well with Drive, which became quite a big soundtrack. And even though Drive was violent and was about a man pursuing revenge in a kind of samurai way, it had a lightness of touch. It had some kind of nice songs in it. It had a bit of wit. It had a bit of love in it. There's no love in Only God Forgives. I mean, it's a loveless world. Even the mother, who's played by Kristen Scott Thomas, hates her son, and she's kind of there to kind of exact some kind of revenge. It's sort of nebulous what she is. That she's one of the main reasons to see it, because you've never seen her do this role before. She's this kind of killer blonde in heels.
So it's to see a blonde Kristen Scott Thomas and the wallpaper.
Nice wallpaper.
That's
what I was saying. Only God Forgives. And what it lacks is the lightness of touch that kind of Drive had, a bit of wit and a bit of sunlight. Mm. And the nice song on the soundtrack by which we have for you, because Only God Forgives has only a throbbingly relentless soundtrack. So I thought, remember why Drive was so good, because it has nice songs.
So this is College, a real hero. This is from Drive.
Yeah.
This isn't from Only God Forgives.
But Only God Forgives doesn't have this. And this is an example of if this was in Only God Forgives, it might have been better.
Sian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms, Jason Solomon. So hang on, that was from Drive.
That was from Drive.
And if that had been in Only God Forgives, then it would be a good film.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Something a bit like that. Okay. That's what it needed to lift it. And it for some reason, Nicholas, the director, thought, well, I'll be a bit more serious this time. But actually what made Drive work was that there was a sort of tongue-in-cheek reference to those kind of great kind of 70s B movies that were from Hollywood. This one, while it references the B movies of the Middle East, of the Far East, sorry.
Your East right, for goodness sakes. I don't want any trouble here.
Far East, it doesn't, it sort of got, it disappears up its own oppressive seriousness.
Now listen, we've got 6.5 minutes.
Mm.
You've got 3 films.
Yeah, I can do it.
I believe a challenge has just been accepted. What have you got next? You're using a Filofax.
Do you know what?
Filofax.
Me and Del Boy, we're the only two.
That's incredible. I feel like I've travelled back to 1989.
I love a Filofax.
Oh, well done you.
I have so many deceased contacts in here. It's brilliant. Some of them got 01 numbers.
There is a whole documentary. At what point do you delete a dead person's telephone number from your phone? Right, we've got even less time now for your 2 minutes each. What have you got next?
Right, it's not only Hollywood that gets in on the trilogies and sequels act. European art house can do so too. This week sees the release of Paradise, Hope, the final instalment in Ulrich Seidel's Austrian trilogy, the Paradise trilogy. We had Faith, we had Love, and now we have Hope, which in the Seidel canon is the stuff that kills you. The first one examined a fat Austrian woman on holiday in Kenya having sex with the local boys. The second one examined a woman who starts up a kind of a business selling religious relics. This third one is the lightest and most kind of happy of the three. It examines 13-year-old Melinda who is sent to diet camp for the summer holidays.
Are these documentaries?
No. These are austere European art house.
Someone thought this would be a really good idea to make this a story. Wow.
Yeah, it is. I mean, he's like Michael Haneke on a miserable day.
Yep.
He's kind of rigorously... his compositions are clinical, ironic, detached. He hates everyone. Ulrich
That's
Seidel.
Me. That's yeah. me. I'm mean, with
he,
this fella.
The first shot, you think, oh, you're just going to be so bitter and cruel and ironic and really mistreat your subjects here. Actually, the film is sort of almost compassionate for him. We see the 13-year-old Melinda kind of being put through her paces with all the other sort of fat Austrians pedestrian teenagers.
Yes, well done.
Get to wander around. And but it looks beautiful. I mean, they're in this kind of really austere kind of, you know, Nazi era kind of gym with a big fat gym teacher going, blowing whistles, going, all right, get down, give me five.
Someone's made this into a, this isn't some weird dream you've had. No, it's an actual movie.
Actually true. Although there is bits of it that she thought she gets developed a really, a crush on the really cruel kind of coarse doctor who kind of exploits her. And there's a kind of sort of cruel element of, is this going to be kind of extremely inappropriate kind of thing? I mean, this director kind of really treads the line between, you know, this film takes you to the abyss and peers in, doesn't quite jump in. His previous films do jump in, quite import, export, etc. But the compelling clinical composition of his cinematography, the photography of it is kind of rather wonderful as well.
Nice wallpaper?
No wallpaper.
No wallpaper.
Kein Wandpaper.
Okay, I'm not even going to attempt my German because it sounds like swears. Okay, what next?
So that's it's Paradise. So I just thought I'd mention that. So people do trilogies too. The Studio Ghibli, people might know them from Spirited Away, The Cats,
Howl's Japanese Moving Animation.
Japanese animation, which is probably, you know, if all the animation, it's probably, obviously Pixar's good, but Japanese animation for some reason is allowed to be artistic. That's kind of the adults are allowed to watch that. You don't need children to watch Ponyo, etc. Although they actually get it too. Spirited Away is one of the all-time great cartoons, if I can call them that. And they're back with From Up on Poppy Hill, which is their latest animation, which is about a love story between a boy and a girl at a high school in Tokyo. Well, in Agahama. Somewhere. Okay. It's a port town near Tokyo. Tokyo is preparing for the 1964 Olympics. Japan is trying to recover from the ravages of the Second World War. And this is a love story between these two high school kids who then realise that they actually might be related and be a brother and sister. So there's the kind of like, oh, we can't do that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So this hasn't got flying animals in it. It's just about people. It's kind of got great insights into Japanese life. It's almost a bit like an Ozu film, like a Tokyo Story. There's lots of people eating bowls of noodles. There's industrialists. It's really, really charming. Beautifully drawn, great soundtrack of kind of it's directed by Geo Miyazaki, who is the son of the Hayao Miyazaki, who is the founder of Studio Ghibli and the guy who directed the big hit Spirited Away. There's something missing from this one. It hasn't quite got what makes all the other ones so amazing, but it is still very good. I'm not sure who it's aimed at. It wasn't quite adult enough for me because it was a bit of a high school movie, and yet it was way ahead of, you know, 4-year-olds couldn't go to this one. So I think smart, sophisticated teenagers. But if there are any,
do they exist?
I don't think they exist anymore. That's the thing. I don't wish to do down any kind of talented 12-year-olds out there, but it needs to be a sort of smart, patient 12-year-old. If you can find any of those, get them to watch From
Good Luck. Always like to say, Kore wa dani no kasa desu ka? Which means, whose umbrella is this?
It's on there.
Yeah. And finally, a film that I've always wanted to see, and I've never got... that was From Up on Poppy Hill. A film I've always wanted to see because I'm intrigued by the mythology and history around it. It's being re-released, Heaven's Gate.
That's right, Heaven's Gate, Michael Cimino's Western from 1980, which has come with so much almost iconic baggage. They don't make Westerns anymore. The reason being is that Heaven's Gate killed off the genre.
It was the world's biggest flop at the time, wasn't it?
It lost United Artists all its money. In fact, David Putnam, who was head of the studio at that time, kind of, you know, that kind of sunk it. It was supposed to be a massive folly. No one wanted to do Westerns anymore. This was the final nail in the Western coffin. So it arrived, kind of think this is a great disaster in a way. But it's been restored by the director. I never saw it. I've never seen Heaven's Gate before. It's out now. In the restored version, and it is magnificent.
Is it really?
It really is.
Because it's had such a bad press.
Such a bad sort of sting around it, in a way, and I don't know what that was about. I could see at the time, maybe, it's quite out there, it's quite moody, it is marvellous. It is a sort of, I can see why it was a folly, in the way that Liz Taylor and Richard Burton's Cleopatra, which was re-released recently, but that's still really long, and it has brilliant bits in it, but it is a bit of a slog. Mm. This is long, but it is just fantastic. It's got brilliant, the Christopher Walken is extraordinary in it.
Yes.
And I think that now, because Walken has, that was early in his career, but now he's become such an icon, it's to be admired. And that Isabelle Huppert is in it. There are some really wonderful actors in it.
Jason, we have to wrap up there, but Heaven's Gate, your movie of the week.
I would say Heaven's Gate is my movie of the week, even though it's, you know, 35 years old. But otherwise, I'm going to say, for the first time ever, the horror movie, The Conjuring, is my movie of the week.
Jason Solomons, very nice to meet you. Thank you very much for coming
in.
020-7224-2000, if you want to have a say in any of those. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. Oh, I've got all excited at the thought of going going to see Heaven's Gate. I forgot Kris Kristofferson was in it. I love the story of that film. This massive folly that cost, was it something like $120 million, which back in 1980 is the equivalent of $16 billion or something ridiculous. Thank you very much to Jason for that. Coming up shortly, we'll have Marcus de Sotoy, the professor, who'll be telling us about Brainiac Live. And before 3 o'clock, we'll have some live music from Robbie Boyd. If you want to give me a call and join in, maybe tell us about a film that Jason missed, or tell us the best place to have a doze in London, you can give me a call. 020-722-4200. You can text 81333. Start your text with London. You can also email me, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Afternoon, it's 1:34. It's Thursday, the 1st of August. This is Ian Lee, BBC London, 94.9, sitting in for Robert. Coming up in the next 30 minutes, Marcus de Sotoy, we're coming in to talk about science, about Brainiac Live and other bits and pieces. After two, we'll be playing Cover to Cover. Cracking song, two cracking versions as well. Love the one you're with. We've got Stephen Stills versus the Isley Brothers. Let's have a little tease now as to what we've got coming up. This is the Stephen Stills.
Don't be angry, don't be sad.
Just those chiming acoustic guitars.
Over good time to have. There's a girl right next to you.
It's a dirty song though. It doesn't contain a very moralistic message.
And there's a rose.
Sounds romantic. There's a rose in a fisted glove, and the eagle flies with the dove. But what, Stephen?
And if you can't be with the one you love, honey, love the one you love.
He's naughty. Well, this is the Isley Brothers.
Angry, I don't say. Don't sit crying.
Members of my production team say maybe it's not dirty, just practical, you know. You've got an itch, you've got to scratch it, haven't you?
And she's just waiting.
We're trying to find the definitive and the best version of that song after 2 o'clock. You can start calling now if you want, 020-722-4200. Also, I've been asking for your best places to sneak a little doze, to catch 40 winks in London. I had a cracking doze in my car. Highgate car park, the Highgate Tube car park, shady. It feels a little bit damp down there, even in this the weather like this. Where else can you have a doze in London? Vinny has emailed in. Hello, Vinny. You can really? You can sleep in your local Waterstones. They always have chairs at the back of the shop. Yeah, I don't think you're meant to sleep in those chairs, and I'd be worried that you might get kicked out. Hi, Ian, says Rigsby. I'm having a lovely doze right now. I'm lying in the sun on the south bank of the Thames at Woolwich, wearing just a pair of shorts. Hope you're enjoying your lunch. Oh, it gets worse. They are too tight, and I am too old to be wearing them, but I've never felt more alive. Thank you, Rigsby. And finally on the email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Rocky Robin says, I was couch surfing recently, having let my room for a week. Unable to return to my room as normal in the daytime, I found a delightful spot where I could doze for several hours. The Imperial War Museum Gardens, south of the river and slightly out of the way. However, inevitably, most parks near the centre have been discovered and are populated by undesirables. I was sunning myself. One gentleman laid under a tree in the Tibetan Peace Garden on a carpet of daisies. What a lovely image. Woke up, wandered to the garden border flanking Lambeth Road, undid his fly and watered the plants. Oh, dear. No, that's not good. So we've got the Imperial War Museum Gardens. We've got the south bank of the Thames at Woolwich. And we've got the chairs at the back of Waterstones. I don't think they technically count. Where are the best places to have a doze in London? Ian.lee@bbc.co.uk or 020-722-4200. We're going to be talking science soon. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms. Now, science. I was never particularly good at science at school. If I'm honest, I was never particularly good at anything at school. I was too busy messing around and being naughty. But science, as I've discovered as I got older, is fun. It is interesting. Turns out it's quite important as well. Joined by it now by Marcus de Sotoy, OBE. Hello, Marcus.
Hello.
Do you kind of mention the OBE quite a lot? No, not at all, actually.
I'm quite surprised. I mean, I got it for promoting science, actually.
Yes.
So services to science, I think.
How long ago did you get it?
I think I got it in 2010.
Because so, I would be banging on about it all the time. Do you ever write it at the end of your name and things?
Only if I'm writing a complaint letter to try and say, you know, why did you give me this parking ticket at OBE?
OBE.
It doesn't work. So, I mean, there isn't any special sort of thing for OBEs. And
that's a shame.
So, yeah.
Brainiac Live Science Abuse. This is now, Brainiac has been a hugely successful show on Sky One, is it? On Sky, I think it
I think
is.
It kicked off on ITV, didn't it?
It may have done.
But absolutely. I mean, I got a 17-year-old kid who basically was brought up on Brainiac. I mean, we used to watch The Simpsons, and then out of The Simpsons would come Brainiac. And it's just, you know, it's great entertainment, but it's showing bits of science.
The thing I don't get about science, because science is, now I'm older, it's fascinating. Of course it's fascinating. It's science. Why is it so dull in schools, or at least it was 25 years ago when I was at school? Why did they make it so dull?
Well, I think you've got to science is about telling stories, which I think is why sort of science translates really well to being put on stage, like this show, Brainiacs. It's a live show in the centre of London. And I think that, in a way, you've got to have a good storyteller in order to be able to tell a story. And sometimes, you know, science teachers aren't the best at telling those stories, which is a real shame. I think you've got some fantastic science teachers out there. I certainly had them who really enthused me about the wonders of electricity and chemicals reacting to create sort of surprising things in front of your eyes. And I think that's the point. You want to tell these stories such that there's an element of surprise and you don't understand them. And then the science is kind of like telling you who done it. It's kind of mystery story.
Yeah, and it is, you know, we had Bunsen burners and explosions and things, but even my teacher at school couldn't make that interesting. How could, and
oh,
I was
that's a shame.
A 14-year-old boy, and I was bored by the explosions. But Brainiac is brilliant because it has captured the imagination of I can say young people because I'm very, very old now. It has captured the imagination of young people, and it has totally hooked them. It's been running for a long time, hasn't it, as a TV show.
That's right. But it's interesting that it's translated very well to a live show on stage. I mean, doing these experiments live, I think, is really exciting. And you want to see the things in front of your eyes, not just on telly, which I think is great. You know, they're blowing things up in front of your eyes, or in front of your ears, in a way. I mean, I went along to the dress rehearsal, and the explosions they produce are terrifying.
And this is happening. It's at the Palace Theatre. It runs until the 17th of August. How are they allowed to do explosions in a theatre? That's what was... I was worried that they might be taming it down a little bit and doing tiny little things.
No,
have I got that wrong?
Rest assured, they are not toning it down. I mean, there's an extraordinary explosion, which actually explains the gas laws, which you might have done in school, the sort of how pressure, volume and temperature depend on each other. Mm. And so, you know, if temperature increases, so does pressure, and that can lead to an extraordinary explosion, which they do very well in the show.
Oh, I wish you'd been my teacher. You're making that sound exciting.
Well, I haven't even gone bang yet.
I know, just that simple. So you've seen the dress rehearsal for the show. You're not in it, but you've seen it. What kind of things, without ruining too much, without telling us who did it, what kind of stuff will we be seeing in the Palace Theatre?
There's a lot of blowing things up, which is what you'd expect from Brainiac. I mean, you know, they blow up a caravan for you. They blow up a microwave.
Not in the live show. That's on the...
In the live show. I mean, come on, it's Brainiac. You expect a caravan to be blown up.
But
so, it's not quite...
Okay,
it's pyrotechnics in action. But, I mean, it's got the quality of that, sort of what you expect from Brainiac. But they are doing some real sort of explosions, which are using liquid nitrogen. You can get something incredibly cold, and then you bring it up to room temperature. That, the gas laws say, means a big expansion. Put that in a bottle, and you've got the biggest bang out. But there are other really beautiful things. I mean, the show actually ends with something called the Air Zuka Challenge, which is one. It's very simple. It's you've got a tube with a sort of rubber diaphragm at one end, and you put smoking, and you just sort of pop the diaphragm, and it shoots air out. But you get these beautiful vortexes of air going through the theatre.
Wow.
And with the smoke, you can actually see them like smoke rings or donuts of air. And I was spellbound by it. It was amazing.
How does it work as a live show? Is there a narrative? Is it just like one long lecture?
No. It's more like stand-up. I mean, so it's kind of stand-up routines sort of interspersed with bits of video to illustrate other sort of things like weird songs, which if you give people the words, you can't stop hearing strange sort of words being sung. And so I would say it's kind of like stand-up science.
Right. And if I went, would I come away actually having learnt anything?
Yes, I think you would. And even if you don't, I mean, even if kids sort of don't understand the bits of explanation they pop in, I think that, you know, if you come away just thinking, oh, why did that happen? I think that's, you know, that's the key to making a good scientist, somebody who starts asking the question. I didn't really understand it, but why did it suddenly explode?
What age is it aimed at?
I'd say it's actually aimed at quite a sort of young audience. It's sort of on in the morning and early afternoon,
okay.
Before actually they got Darren Brown in the afternoon.
So you've got to clear out for him, the mind bender.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. You never know what might happen if you stay around.
Yeah.
But, so I would say it's probably end of primary, key stage three,
okay.
Is a perfect audience for it. But no, I think adults will enjoy it as well.
I wish my boy's 3.5. He doesn't like loud shows, so I wouldn't take him. Does he?
No, it's funny. Mine don't either.
Isn't it funny?
Yeah. They see a balloon and they run a mile.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a shame because I would love to take them.
How old are yours?
I've got 2 10-year-old
right,
girls.
Okay. Yeah.
My 17-year-old is fine. He'll blow anything up. But the 2 10-year-old girls are a little bit terrified of explosions. So, but you know, you can still put your fingers in your ears and for those
but
bits.
I would love to take him, partly because I want to go and see him see this myself, but my boy at 3.5, it's the why stage. Why is the sky blue, why is that? And I've seen some parents, oh not now, but the surely the joy is me telling him the answer or helping him work out the answer. If I don't know it, I say, well, should we go and get a book and have a look?
Well, exactly. I think that's a really important thing. And as scientists, it's very important that we say, actually, you know what? I don't know. The things we don't know are the exciting things. That's what drives me as a scientist, to try and discover new things. I mean, the things I do know are great, but it's those challenges, the things that when my kid goes, why? And I think, actually, you know what? Not really sure. That's the exciting stuff.
It is exciting. It's like, I don't know, should we go and have a look on the computer, see if we can find out together? And it's great, isn't it?
No, exactly. I think, you know, sometimes teachers are a little bit frightened, I think, to expose to their kids that they might not know the answer to this. But I think actually it's very empowering because that's fine. But how do you find out why is equally as important as the answer.
There are other science shows, aren't there? Because when I first read this, I thought, "Oh, this is odd, a live science show." It's not that uncommon, is it nowadays?
No, it's amazing. I mean, it's almost like science and theatre are coming together all over the place. So, actually, down at the Science Museum, you've got another show called The Energy Show, which is sort of got more of a narrative story through scientific experiments. I was at Latitude doing a show about consciousness, but there was Gorilla Science, who are doing a lot of science for the festival goers. They've been at Glastonbury. They're going to be at Wilderness Festival in Oxfordshire.
I've heard of them. What do they do?
Oh, they're great. It's kind of more science experiments for grown-ups.
Right.
For example, they were in Latitude when I met up with them. They were dissecting jelly brains. And that actually was for the kids. So they'd molded these jellies in the shape of brains. But it was great because they were just exploring sort of brain architecture by and then you could eat the things. So.
You mentioned the Science Museum. The Science Museum is one of the greatest gifts to London, isn't it? This free place where
Absolutely.
You can go in. And my boy has loved it since he was 2. It's constantly. And because it's free, you can go there as often as you want. And it's just a joy. And there is so much. I remember going as a kid, and I loved it because you could push buttons.
Yeah.
You could touch things. You could move things around.
It's
great.
Absolutely right. I think that's one of the important things, because I think science it's not a spectator sport. You've got to do the science. And I think that's the other nice thing about the Brainiac Show, is that they actually bring kids up on stage to do stuff. You know, I absolutely agree with you. The Science Museum is just one of the gems of London, of the UK. I mean, they've just got fantastic things.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm doing a project with them at the moment, looking at doing a piece of theatre in the autumn.
It'll be
a slightly more grown-up piece, but
yes.
It's called X and Y.
Hang on a second. This sounds vaguely mathematical.
Oh, yes, it is.
How are you going to make this fun?
Well, exactly. So... No, I mean, we actually did a dummy run of it actually at Latitude last summer, and people kind of loved it. So it's exactly that, the challenge of finding innovative ways to bring a subject like mathematics alive.
Mm.
So we explore ideas of, you know, what is infinity? What's the shape of the universe?
Things like that make my head hurt.
Oh, no, but don't they make you kind of like, just, you know, is the universe infinite? Does it just go on forever, or is there... a wall out there. You know, maybe it's the Truman Show and there's cameras behind looking in on us.
Things like this make me feel so insignificant and small and make me want to cry.
I know. But
are we expanding? Are we expanding? Is the universe
expanding? We're accelerating away. I mean, it's terrifying.
How do we know that for sure, though?
Oh, that's the wonderful thing about science, that you can actually use, you know, here we are stuck on planet Earth.
Yep.
Yet using the power of mathematics and science, we can look at the way the light varies on different stars as they're different distances away from planet Earth, and we can actually detect that some of the stars are accelerating at a faster rate away from us than others, which tells us things about, you know, the universe, you know, billions and billions of miles away from us. I mean, that's extraordinary, I think. Although we're so insignificant, still, with the power of science, we can tell so much about...
We can tell how insignificant we actually are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How did you get into science? What was it a teacher at school that got you hooked? What was it?
Yeah, I think I was very lucky. Actually, it was more mathematics that I was interested in. And I like mathematics, actually, because it's a sort of bridge between the sciences and the arts. I mean, I think there's a lot of connections between mathematics and music, for example.
Yep.
So actually, this gig I was doing at Latitude, I was working with James Holden, who's a DJ and electronic music artist, exploring, and he was a mathematician in Oxford as well, as an undergraduate. So I like mathematics because it's kind of a bridge between the two. And I got into maths because a great teacher. I was at a comprehensive school in Oxfordshire. This teacher, the end of a lesson, says, I'd like to see you at the end of the class. And he took me around the back of the maths block. I thought I was in trouble. And then he said, look, you should find out what maths is really about. And he started recommending various books to me. And
so he spotted something in you that perhaps you hadn't recognised yourself.
Yeah, I didn't think I was... I went back a few years ago. I did a show that BBC does, this Top of the Class programme, where you go back to meet a teacher that inspired you.
Oh, dear.
And I asked him, you know, why did you pick me out? Did you do that with lots of people? And he said, no, actually, I only did it with you, but I could see that you were responding to abstract thinking. And I thought, well, that mathematics is all about abstract thinking. And so he didn't do it to anybody else.
Isn't that funny?
But I think it's so often a teacher... Or going to see, or a TV program, or going to see a show like all these science shows that are on, that suddenly turns you on to, actually, I'd love to be doing that. I went to the Christmas lectures, for example, when I was a kid, when they were first done on maths. And I remember coming away from that, wow, mathematics is so exciting. That's what I want to be.
Did your friends at school not go, oh, is geeky Marcus?
Well, I'm... Actually, things have really changed because I think now there's a real geek chic around.
There is,
those at school who know their science actually get a bit of kudos.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I was particularly stigmatised because I enjoyed maths and science and stuff like that. I mean, there were enough of us who kind of got off on it
Well, it served you well. So your show X and Y, that's going to be at the Science Museum. Do you have a date for that yet, or is that still a work in progress?
It's a little bit work in progress, but I think that we've got the end of September, beginning of October, and then we're also going up to the other museum in Manchester, which the Science Museum have, Mossy.
Yes, of course.
We're going to perform it there during the Manchester Science Festival. So.
And Brainiac Live, Science Abuse, is that started now, has
it's
it?
It's already started.
Right.
It's got another 2.5 weeks of run to go, so there's plenty of opportunity.
17th to August it finishes at the Palace Theatre.
Yeah.
It's going to be noisy. One thing I'm always concerned about these things, will the audience get wet or dirty at any point? Is there any of that...
I think they're pretty safe on that score.
But, good.
I think it's the people on stage that suffer good. The most with electrocution and various other sort of things.
Well, it sounds like cracking fun. I need to try and persuade my boy to come. Marcus De Soto, thank you so much for coming in. Very nice to meet you. You made it sound very exciting. Brainiac Live, Science Abuse, is at the Palace Theatre now. Runs until 17th August. And it's mornings and kind of lunchtime shows as well.
Which... Yeah, that's right. It's sort of 11 o'clock, 2 o'clock and some 4 o'clock shows as
brilliant.
Well.
Brilliant. Okay, but get out quick. Otherwise, Darren Brown will do something to you that you don't want done to your mind. Marcus, very nice to meet you. Thank you very much indeed. 0207 22 4 2000. We're going to have Cover to Cover shortly, but before that, let's have a little bit of music, shall we? Oh, wasn't Marcus an absolute joy? What a lovely gentleman. I wish my science teachers at school were so grumpy. Oh, and one of them hated me. I used to get told... I remember once someone took a lid out of a sulfuric acid bottle or something and didn't put the lid back. The lid went missing. And this teacher, who shall remain nameless, stormed into our classroom. Who stole this lid? Lee? Well, they called me Rugby. That was it. Lee, was it you? It was you, wasn't it? Detention. And he gave me a wallop. It wasn't me. It was not me. Wish Mark has been my teacher. It's Brainiac Live, Science Abuse at the Palace Theatre. It's going to be the battle of Stephen Stills versus the Isley Brothers.
BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. Thursday, two more days of me, and then Robert's back next week. Fantastic stuff. Looking forward to this bit, though. This is my favourite bit of the week, I think. Partly because I get to play an excellent song twice. Well, I say twice, it's two different versions. Then I get to listen to you lot arguing and fighting and defending and taking these songs apart. Telling me which version you think is the best. It's cover to cover. You helped me immensely yesterday, Tuesday. I couldn't have chosen a song to pick. In the end, us, came up with Love the One You're With. Now, the Stephen Stills version I'm a huge fan of, and I have been since probably about 15, when my friend Ian Roberts kind of got me into Crosby, Stills and Nash. The Isley Brothers, I have heard, but a long, long time ago. So those are the two versions we've got. Stephen Stills versus the Isley Brothers. We'll start off with Stills' version. Want your calls on this, please. 0207-224-2000. You know how this works. You know how this works better than me. You listen every single week. Call up. Pick your favourite version, defend it, attack your least favourite version. Tell me what it means to you. Why do the Isley Brothers mean more to you than Stephen Stills? Why do you think the Stephen Stills version is more musically proficient than the Isley Brothers? Or maybe you think it's the other way around. It depends on you. At the end, we're going to decide which is the best. We're going to burn all copies of the other version. I think we can do that here at the BBC. I will have to run that past the bosses, but I think we can do that. Lots of ways to get in touch. You can email ian.lee, I-A-I-N.L-E-E, at bbc.co.uk. You can text me, 81333. Start your text, 81333, start your text with London. The best way to do this, though, the best way to talk about music and defend music and attack music is, of course, via a conversation. So the phone number you need, you can start calling now, 020-722-4-2000. Right, shall we get started? We're going to start with the original version. This is Stephen Stills. I think it's from the album Stephen Stills, if I got it correct. It's the one where he's sat in the snow and a giraffe is sat next to him. Not a real one, that would be ridiculous. This is Stephen Stills and Love the One You're With. Oh, I love it. I love it. It's so joyous. Just that, I mean, everybody is singing on that. It's a Stephen Stills solo record, but I think David Crosby and Graham Nash are on there. Neil Young might be in there. Joni Mitchell's probably in there. I wouldn't be surprised if James Taylor popped up as well. Carole King might be in there. She was kind of part of that scene. Mama Cass, I think, could be on there as well. God, I wish I had the album to hand. But the back in the early 70s, there was this real kind of attitude. Hey, you're making a record? Well, I'm in the Studio B. Well, I'll pop in. You got some drugs? Yeah, I'll pop in next door and I'll do some backing vocals for you. But only if you come and do some backing vocals on my record. I've got drugs. That was the 70s, wasn't it? This amazing, everybody singing on each other's records. Sometimes it was announced. Sometimes they couldn't announce it because then record companies would get all litigious. And, well, you can't have Mama Cass singing on there. She's signed to MCA and you're signed to Elektra. It's a cracking song. It's a dirty song. There's no denying it. It's a very, very dirty song. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. Oh, please. Oh, please, Stephen, is that really your best defence for being caught in bed with that 19-year-old groupie? That's the Stephen Stills version. That's the version I know, and I know it very, very well. Next up, it's the Isley Brothers. I need you to decide, dear listener, which is the best? 020-722-4-2000. So there we go. Those are the two versions. Yeah. We could have played the Bucks Fizz version. Apparently Bucks Fizz did it. We didn't. It was the B-side to Bucks Fizz's 18th single. Bucks Fizz had more than three singles. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Love the One You're With, written by Stephen Stills. Released by Stephen Stills in 1970, went to number 14 in the charts. And then the Isley Brothers, I assumed they did it many years after. They did it in 1971. The 70s were odd, weren't they? Because people could have a hit with a song 6 months after the original artist had. You've heard both versions. It's over to you, London. But which one do you think is the best and why? 020 722 42000. Why do you think it's the best? Is it because of the memories that you hold to that version? Is it because of you favour? I mean, I'm a huge Stephen Stills fan. I've said before, he's better than Neil Young. 0207 22 42000. Lynn's in Manor Park. Hello, Lynn.
Hello, Ian. Listen, I must say, darling, I love your presentation, your uplift, and your undertones of cheekiness.
Oh, Lynn!
I'd like to see you on after 10 o'clock.
Oh, do you think I could be a bit naughty after 10 o'clock?
Well, going by some of the things you've said already, my word.
I've not said anything naughty today, have I? I'm on my best behaviour, Lynn.
No, you just said about doing one song and someone in the next room says, if you've got any drugs, we're coming and do
it. Oh, well, yeah, but that was what the 70s were like, weren't they? They were all over the place, those guys.
Well, if they wanted paracetamol, they should have gone to the chemist. I'll get you out of it.
Thank you very much, Lynn. I would like to come back at some point. Which of those two versions hits home most with you?
Oh, well, darling, my ears was upset by the second one. For me, it's got to be Stephen Stills. The guitar work, it's all bright and chirpy. His voice, as you say, it's uplifting.
Yeah.
But I've got a different interpretation, I'm sorry.
Oh, go, what, you've understood the song in a different way? Go on.
Well, I think he's really loved someone, but now she's gone off or he's lost her because he was a plonker.
Yeah.
And he's with someone now who's quite nice, but it's not the one that he truly, truly, truly wants. That's what I think.
So you're not thinking, I interpret it as
I don't think he's making do with what's there because his woman's away.
Oh, I was going for that kind of late 60s free love kind of vibe that, hey, listen, my wife might be in New York and I'm in Los Angeles, but hang on, there's a pretty groupie next to me, so I'm going to love the one I'm with.
Well, they didn't used to marry wives anyway, did they? They just sort of whatever.
It was whatever. I couldn't handle all that.
Up Andy. But no, I really think...
whatever's up Andy, yes.
I really, truly think, Ian, that the one he really, really wanted, you know, he's lost.
Right.
Like Jim Diamond, I Should Have Known Better.
Yes.
What a fantastic song.
That was a cracking song, isn't it?
Oh, he cries his heart out when he's singing that. I've got it on an 84 video. My God, it makes me cry.
But Lynn, reeling you back into this world.
You're
plonking for. That's probably not the right word. You're voting. That's it, not plonking.
Stephen Stills.
Lynn, thank you very much. Nice
thank
to talk to you.
So
thank
much.
You. Good. Thank you for the kind words. There we go. That's Lynn in Manor Park. 1-0 to Stephen Stills. But the 60s and 70s, I've read a lot of books. I just see that Graham Nash has got an autobiography out, actually. I might have to get that, even though he's my least favourite of the CSN and indeed the Y. But the 60s and 70s, you read any of those books, they were all over each other. It was very messy. I don't want to go into too much detail. We have young ears listening. It's the summer holiday. But they were very messy times. Looking at the backing vocals for the Stephen Stills version, Rita Coolidge, John Sebastian, Crosby and Nash. I suspect there were more. I'm sure I can hear a faint hum of Mama Cass in there somewhere. 020-722-42000. Lynn has gone for the Stephen Stills version. Who is Chris in Crystal Palace going to go for? Chris?
Good afternoon, Ian.
Good afternoon to you, Chris. Is it still nice weather out there?
Oh, it's spectacular. It's made all the better by this kind of music.
It's good. Both versions, very uplifting, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I've got to say, you know, the Isley Brothers can do no wrong for me, but I am going for Stephen Stills on this one. I'm a bit of an anorak when it comes to this record, I'm afraid.
Oh, go on.
Well, apparently, the title actually comes from Billy Preston, who used the expression quite regularly, and they met each other at a party, and he asked if he could use it for a song, and Billy Preston, yeah, sure, you know,
So
how, you dropped out there for a second, Chris. What comes from the, from Billy Preston? The phrase "Love the one you're with."
Yeah, absolutely. The actual title.
Oh,
it was an expression that he used a lot, apparently. And Stephen Stills picked up on it. They met at a party, asked if he could use it, and Billy Preston said, "Sure," you know. So, but the other thing is that Stephen Stills is playing his heart out on this. He's playing just about everything.
Yeah.
He's obviously vocals, guitar, he plays the organ, but as much as anything, he does all the percussion as well, including the steel drums, which, for me, is just inspirational move for the song, it really is.
But a lot of people don't realise, Captain Many Hands, I think, was Stephen Stills' nickname, because on the first Crosby, Stills and Nash album, he's playing everything, and he would do it, and I'm not being flippant, this is how he would do it. He would take a lot of cocaine and stay up for days, this is breaking no trade secret, and would stay up for days just laying track upon track and playing everything and everything. He was, the drugs to one side, very naughty, I don't condone it, but he was, I do think he's an overlooked genius in the studio.
That's the word I was going to use. Genius, absolutely. You know, I've seen him live a few times. He's incredible.
I've seen Crosby, Stills, Nash live a few times, and for some reason now, Chris, they don't play Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And about 5 or 6 years ago, Stephen Stills was playing a gig at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. I was very, very excited, and I went down to sit, except for some reason I thought it was the Hammersmith Odeon. So I turned up the Hammersmith Odeon, it's empty. I was like, oh, nuts. My wife and I jumped in a cab, and we got to the Shepherd's Bush Empire. He was on stage. I'm thinking, oh, fantastic, I've not missed it. And he literally did the last chorus of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, went, thanks very much, we'll be back in 25 minutes. I've never seen him play that song live.
Oh, no, oh, dear, oh, well, hey-ho. But, no, great song, and...
Okay, Chris, lovely. That's a second vote for Stephen Stills there. He is, and I'm not being flippant about the drugs. That's how he used to do it. He became a wreck of a man because of the drugs. And I'm not in any way trying to say they are cool. They are not at all. You see the mess he became in the 70s and the 80s. And indeed, to a certain extent, I mean, he's still an amazing guitarist, Stephen Stills. He is a husk of a man, though. You know, you try and understand what he's saying when he's on stage, and it's down to that. But one of the most talented musicians ever. The first Manassas album, anybody? Wonderful. Wayne's in Buckhurst Hill. Hello, Wayne. Is it going to be a complete whitewash for Stephen Stills?
Yes.
You're...
No. I'm going for the Isley Brothers.
The Isley, or indeed the Isley Brothers, as most people like to call them.
Yeah.
Why have you gone for them?
Well, I was a great fan of Buffalo Springfield, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, and I thought it was the weakest of the solo albums that were released. I was really disappointed when it was released. I think Change Partners was the best track, but I was really disappointed. I was so looking forward to it after the David Crosby was released, and then...
Nash did an album as well, didn't he? And Neil Young did one around about there, maybe half...
After the Gold Rush.
After the Gold Rush.
Which was incredible.
It's a cracking record.
Really, in response to you not liking Neil Young, I have to go against the Monkey Reject.
Oh, of course. Well remembered. Of course, Stephen Stills auditioned for the Monkees. They said, yeah, we like you, but your teeth and your hair. Do you know anybody who looks like you, but with better teeth? Peter Tork arrived on the scene, and that's how he got that gig. Were you really disappointed with that first Stephen Stills album?
I really was.
Album?
It was at a time when I was kind of nuts over, you know, the continuation of Buffalo Springfield.
Yep.
And, you know, the two Neil Young first albums were absolutely wonderful, and After the Gold Rush became very commercial. The David Crosby album was sensational.
Which one was that? Was that If I Can Only Remember My Name?
Exactly.
Yeah, that is a cracking record.
So, therefore, I was most disappointed. I didn't have great hopes for Graham Nash, because I always thought he was basically just a harmony singer.
Yeah.
But that was a good album as well. But David...
Stephen Stills.
Stephen Stills' album. What great cover. How about the back of it when he's playing polo?
Oh, it's a superb...
Everything was great. Everybody that backed him, you know, he got a full deck of cards, but the king wasn't great.
But it's a cracking line, Wayne, to end on. We'll give you that. Graham Nash, for me, is always the weakest link within Crosby, Stills, Nash. And I've seen them a few times. I probably won't see them again, because the last two times I saw them... the harmonies were a little bit ropey. But when you go and see a Crosby, Stills and Nash concert, the phrase that always fills me with terror is, here's a new one from Nash. David Crosby tweeted me a few weeks ago. He tweeted me. I sent him a message and he replied to me. I was very excited. I couldn't believe it. It made my day. David Crosby replied to a tweet. 0207 22 4 2000. You got 2 minutes. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone now. You've got 2 minutes. It's 2-1 to Stephen Stills. Do you want to put Mr. Stills, Captain Many Hands, further in the lead, or do you want to make it a draw between him and the Isley Brothers? Now, the Isley Brothers, they have got a cracking sound, wonderful vocals. Again, they have that joy, don't they, in their records? It's that kind of gospel tinged, not too gospely. There's a tinge of gospel in there, which just lifts it. Amazing voices, similar to Stills, with that slightly cracked vocal. When I say a croaky voice, I'm not being rude. It's just that not a smooth sound as some vocalists would have you, they trade on. So they do have similarities. But for me, it is just the exuberance that Stills manages to package in that record. Just kind of tips it for me. Just tips it over the edge. I do have to disagree, though. That first Stephen Stills album is masterpiece. Maybe it's too strong a word. It's darn good, though. It really is. Well, listen, I think we're going to call it a day on that. I think you can still keep texting if you want. We'll have a look at those up until three. But I think the main phone in there, the choice is definitely 2-1 to Mr. Stephen Stills, and rightfully so, I would have to say. The Isley Brothers, great, better than the Luther Vandross version. That was odd. That was an odd one. I am tempted though to go home and YouTube the Bucks Fizz version. No, I am, strangely. I have a slight perversion for a bad cover version, so I might go home and have a little look for that. You can keep emailing me if you want, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Coming up, the last 30 minutes of the show, we've got Robbie Boyd. He's a singer-songwriter from West London. He's tuning up on the sofa as we speak. Good. I like singer-songwriters that stay in tune. That's what we want from our people. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. You can give us a call as well. 0207 22 4 2000. We are fast. God, it's 2:30. How on earth has that happened? I'm trying to put off the inevitable end, because as soon as this show finishes, I have to wander the streets of London trying to buy a birthday present for my wife, something I am absolutely dreading. A good point is made there. One of the biggest scams in the world is bottled water. You're drinking bottled water now. Go and get it from a tap. We have water dispensers here at the BBC. Now, my favourite birthday present years ago, my wife bought me a big posh glass bottle. I was like, oh, what's that? She went, let me show you. She filled it with tap water and put it in the fridge. Oh, it's a gift. It's wonderful. I've got constant cold water. Thank you so much. Love it. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. It's 25 or almost 25 minutes to 3 o'clock. Today has just flown by. I hope it's flown by for you. I'm having the time of my life doing this gig. I may turn up next week and wrestle Robert Elms to the ground to see if I can do it for a little bit longer. I'm having a marvellous time. Coming up before 3 o'clock, we're going to be hearing from Robbie Boyd, who's a singer-songwriter from West London. He's got a new EP out, and he's going to be playing some gigs in and around London in the next few months. He'll be coming in and playing to us live. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9, here until 3 o'clock. Then, of course, it's Joe Good taking over at three. I'm joined now by Robbie Boyd. Hello, Robbie.
Hello, how you doing?
You're looking very summery.
Thank you, yes.
I'm loving your shirt. Where's your shirt from?
I don't know.
Oh, that you're kind of making headway in the music business, do you have a man or a lady that dresses you? Do you have one of those?
Not quite yet.
You should get one of those.
Yeah, that sounds great.
What am I wearing today?
To get involved with that.
Man or lady, you're wearing this today and it'll look great on you.
Sounds fantastic.
So listen, you're from West London. Whereabouts in West London?
Shepherd's Bush.
Oh,
Shepherd's Bush.
Proper West London. Yeah. It's good round there.
Yeah.
You live there all your life?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, went up to Newcastle done a bit in Cricklewood. That was fun.
That's quite posh, isn't it? Cricklewood posh?
Not really.
Have they got rid of those annoying roadworks at the Shepherd's Bush roundabout?
Yes.
Because that was
finally,
hell for
finally,
a while.
It was pretty mental.
Went on for ages. Of course, yeah. Shepherd's Bush, now it's got, I was going to say that hideous shopping centre, but I won't. What's that big shopping centre?
The W word.
The W word. Yeah. That must have changed life there immensely.
Yeah, in a good way, I guess.
Hey, there's more shops. there's more shops. That's got
more people,
to be.
More people.
That's got to be a good thing.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff are you playing? What kind of stuff do you do?
What do I do? I guess upbeat acoustic folk pop rock.
I'm in. I'm totally in. This is my genre.
A medley. Yeah.
This is my genre. Who would you listen to? What kind of music were you listening to? You thought, hey, I want to do some of that, please.
Probably a mixture of Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros.
I don't know those.
John Mayer.
I know John Mayer.
Bon Iver.
I don't know Bon Iver.
Maybe even a bit of Coldplay.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. There you go. I've heard of Coldplay. Yeah. They're a quite popular band, aren't
they?
Yeah,
just about.
I've heard... Not particularly uplifting, though.
Well, it depends which album you're on.
I see. Yeah. Okay. And you are the first British artist, if I got this right, to play the O2. Not just in the O2.
The roof.
The roof of the O2. Yeah. Bon Jovi were the first band, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
How did you get to be the first British artist to do this?
It was basically, I won a busking competition a few years ago, because that's how I started out my career.
Yeah.
Just they've given us loads of cool opportunities.
Yeah.
And I got to be the first British person to play on the roof of the O2.
As cool as that is, I would have said no thank you very much. I couldn't.
Have you got vertigo?
I'm not a fan. How do you get up there? Is there a lift?
You walk up with you're attached all the way. But these pulleys, and it was
those pulleys,
nervy,
those pulleys can break.
They
can break.
Only in your mind. Only in your mind.
The pulleys in my mind. And you go up there, and how did it work? Was there an audience up there?
It was lots of press, lots of people papping away at me, which was quite surreal.
Yeah,
and taking photos and videos, and then the 20 public were up there on the next shift.
Yeah,
that I was performing to. So it was. Pretty amazing.
Wow. So what's happening now? Have you been signed yet? Or are you...
We're kind of in talks at the moment, which is very... So we just released our third EP.
Yeah.
I've got a big band behind me as well, who aren't obviously in the studio.
They couldn't be bothered to tell.
No, exactly.
Lazy. Now, when you say a big band, you don't mean like Glenn Miller. What does the band consist of?
So, seven others.
Wow.
Yeah. Drums, bass, electric guitar, mandolin, violin, saxophone, piano,
you're taking your songs around to various companies. Ruining, I don't want to ruin any deals. I'd hate to be the man that broke you. But how close are you to putting ink to paper?
It's all quite exciting times, actually. Yeah, it is really exciting times. It's taken a while, but it's definitely moving. Fast.
Good. Enjoy this bit. Thank enjoy you, this yeah. anticipatory bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you'll be a jaded old so-and-so in a few years before you know it. So enjoy it.
Well, I got warned that I would be jaded, but I haven't been, which is quite
You look
good,
too enthusiastic to become jaded. listen, you're going to play us a song in a bit, but first of all, let's play I Want You To Stay. Is this the new CD?
That's the new EP, Painted Sky,
Okay, right, well, let's have a little listen to this, and then we'll have a chat a bit more, and
see
we'll have a song live. That's Robbie Boyd, I Want You To Stay. That's from the new EP, Painted Sky. Well, there's a relief. I want you to say, because that was good. If it had been a stinker, the next 20 minutes could have been very, very uncomfortable.
I'm glad you like it.
Listen, I'm a very grumpy 40-year-old man. Mm-hmm. How do you manage to sound so enthusiastic? Tell me, please.
I don't know. I mean, I've got my fair share of vaguely grumpy songs as well. But I prefer performing live and recording the more upbeat songs, because that's what the fans want.
That's what the kids want,
that's
man.
What the kids want.
You're doing a tour in October, including you're playing at the Jazz Cafe, aren't you?
Yeah, yes. Exactly, 29th of October.
And you're doing a little tour all around the UK. Is that with the band, or is that
yeah,
on your
it's
own?
With the full band. Yeah,
which do you prefer, doing stuff on your own or with
definitely
the band?
With the band. Yeah.
There's
much more.
Having played alive. A little bit in bands, there is something, isn't it, when it all kind of clicks.
Yeah,
it gets everyone's on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Well, there was the reason why I formed a band was because I was performing on my own for about a year and a half, and then one of my mates sort of put together a band for me, and it was just that moment when I was just like, yes, this is it. It's all about performing with a band.
Do you have a problem with drummers? Drummers are a special breed because they know there aren't many of them breed. And that they can do what they want because you ain't going to sack the drummer.
My drummer is very, very stubborn. Well, but I love that about him.
Yeah, you said getting that in quickly before.
No, he knows.
Because they often turn up late, if at all. Oh, yeah, sorry, guys, I couldn't make rehearsal yesterday.
Apart from where there's pizza involved. Yeah, I ordered them all pizza the other day to say thank you, and they were bang on time.
Yeah, I bet they were.
It's brilliant.
There's pizza and beer going.
Yeah.
They are going to be there. What do you want to do? Do you want to be going around playing huge stadiums and travelling the world and making lots of money? That doesn't...
Sadly. I think I do, yeah.
Doesn't sound bad, actually, now I said that.
I was never the original intention. It was just, I just started playing, writing songs, and then just, you know, kept leading to bigger and bigger things. And now, yeah, I want it all.
And where were you, were you busking all around London, Shepherd's Bush, places like that?
Yeah, exactly. Even on the Tube and South Bank, and it was just a great way to sort of get my songs out there and develop that sense of confidence of performing live.
It's hard to get people's attention with buskers, particularly when they're playing their own stuff. Everybody, you know, oh, it's an REM
song.
Well,
for me, it was kind of my USP.
Right, okay. So you're always doing your own stuff.
Yeah.
You've got the guitar now, a very nice guitar you've got as well. So what are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play my new single, which is called O Alaska.
Just bear in mind for a second what you've just said.
Yes, okay.
You're on BBC Radio, you've just said, I'm going to play my new single. How cool is that?
That is very cool, very cool.
Away you go.
Savour the moment.
Robbie Boyd, O Alaska. Hey, fantastic. Well done, that was good.
Thank you.
It's odd, isn't it, coming into a studio and singing a song to a man you've only just met. But you did it convincingly.
Thank you.
Robbie Boyd, it was superb.
Officially
stuff.
Serenaded.
I liked it. I tried to make eye contact as much as I could. Is there a website? If people want to come and see you and hear you and things.
Yeah, robbie-boyd.com. It's all there, and then we're on obviously Facebook and Twitter and YouTube.
Are you looking forward to the tour? Is it feeling excitement?
Definitely, yeah. We went on one last year on a small one, and that was fun. And this one is much bigger venues, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And are people, when people came and saw you last time, were they coming to see you? Or Robbie Boyd's playing, let's go and see him, or was it?
Yeah, well, our last gig was in Shepherd's Bush, actually at Bush Hall.
Yeah, oh, great venue.
And it was sold out. Wow. And people came not only from Newcastle, but from Germany for my gig.
How does that make you
surreal.
Feel? That's got to be odd.
People have come from Italy before as well, and it's just amazing.
That's a lot of pressure.
That is a lot of pressure. But I never seem to feel it. I just, my thing.
Listen, fantastic. Give out the website one more time.
So, robbie-boyd.com.
And you're very active on Twitter. You tweeted me. You say, what's your Twitter?
Yeah, at Robbie Boyd Band.
Superb. Listen, Robbie, it's very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
When in a couple of years' time, when you're on Top of the Pops on a Thursday, is that still on?
It should be.
I used to know that guy. I wish you the very best of luck. You've got a lot of talent. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Right, that's it. That's pretty much your lot. Just time to end with one of these, I think. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed myself today. Maybe more than perhaps I should have done. She makes me. We've got the son of Mel Torme coming in tomorrow, James Torme. Oh, wonderful. How cool is that? James Torme's coming in tomorrow. There'll be a whole generation going, Mel who? Oh man, if you don't know Mel Torme, then really, you haven't lived. You haven't lived. We'll also have Food with Nigel Barden. That's all coming up tomorrow. Coming up next with Joanne Good, it's the Barking Hour. That's it, that's me done.